I'm late. I had to stop by the Wax Museum again and give the finger to FDR.
We know Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, is supporting the opposition in Syria. Are we supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria?
It's a proud day for America. And by God, we've kicked Vietnam Syndrome once and for all. Thank you very, very much.
I say it again. You've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked.
These witnesses are trying to simply deny things that just about everybody else accepts as fact.
He came, he saw, he died.
But we ain't killing they army, but we killing them. We be on CNN like, say our name, Ben, say it three times.
The meeting of the largest armies in the history of the world. Then there's going to be an invasion.
All right, you guys, introducing Haytham El-Zabri. There's this great article, well, important article, I don't know how great it is, important article at MondoWeiss.net by Nada Elia. It's called Beto O'Rourke is Anti-Trump and Pro-Israel. Should progressives support him? The real question is, should anybody? And it's about this guy, the candidate, Beto O'Rourke, who's running against Ted Cruz for the U.S. Senate here in Texas. And to get to the point here, Haytham here sent a letter asking the campaign, what's your position on Israel-Palestine, and got quite a disappointing response. And then Haytham posted this important open letter to Beto. Is that how you say it, Beto? In response to that appalling reply. And so that's the context here. So welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Thank you, Scott. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing real good. Appreciate you joining me on the show. So first of all, can you tell me the first thing about this guy? I guess I only learned the other day that he's in the U.S. House right now. But so what the hell do I know? So tell me what you know about him besides his Zionism, first of all, here.
Well, he's seen as a progressive candidate, and since he's running against Ted Cruz, all the progressives are rallying behind him because, you know, he's pretty progressive on women's rights, on marijuana, on various things. Not everything. I mean, he does have some bad points. Like, he did support gentrification of one of the oldest neighborhoods in his own hometown, El Paso. But other than that, he's mostly... And compared to Ted Cruz, he's an angel. So he's got a lot of progressives supporting him and excited about him running up close to Cruz in the polls in what is a very Republican state, obviously. He would represent a refreshing change from Cruz, and you know, hopes are that he would win. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to Palestine, like many other politicians, a lot of them are progressive on everything except Palestine. And this is a shining example of that here.
Mm-hmm. All right. So what was your original question to his campaign that started this?
So my letter, I just kept it short and simple. I just asked, can you please tell me where you stand on the issue of Israel-Palestine? That's all I asked. And I got a letter that was nonstop praise for Israel. I'm looking at the letter now. So basically, it's three paragraphs of praising Israel. He starts, the first sentence of his letter is, Beto is a proud advocate of Israel. And I can read the whole letter if you want. It's pretty short.
Go ahead.
Okay, so he writes that he believes that Israel is critically important to the U.S. because it is the home of the Jewish people, because it is an exemplary democracy that shares our values, and because it is a crucial contributor to our national security objectives in the region. So right there, you can see that there is so much bias. I mean, that's just the first paragraph of three, and you can see how much bias there is in favor of Israel, which is really disappointing. Plus, when he calls it the home of the Jewish people, that pretty much shows that he's completely biased. I mean, he's not even pretending to be neutral on the subject.
Well, I mean, if there was a really big however coming up, then I guess it might be okay. But so please continue.
Yeah, like in some of his talks, he has seemed more reasonable and balanced. But this letter was came as a shock. But so he goes on to say he voted for and will continue to support foreign aid for Israel. He co-sponsored and then voted for a resolution in the last Congress to encourage the Obama administration to quickly finalize a robust and long-term memorandum of understanding with Israel. The resulting agreement will last 10 years and provide Israel $3.8 billion per year. So he was in favor of committing $38 billion to Israel, and he's proud of it. And you know, there's a lot of problems. I know you've covered this material in your previous shows, but you know, obviously the problems are this money basically enables Israel to continue oppressing the Palestinian people and violating international law and violating human rights and ethnically cleansing and bombarding civilians in Gaza and killing innocent unarmed civilians in the West Bank. I mean, it just enables all of the crimes that Israel is committing. And he says it proudly. He's proud that he co-sponsored asking the Obama administration to quickly finalize it. You know, like Obama isn't even going fast enough for him.
Yeah. Well, you know, unfortunately, and I don't know enough about the guy, but the whole thing smacks of dishonesty, right? There's a split between the people who finance Democratic candidates and the people who are subject to the ads that those dollars buy, right, who have a different point of view. So the rank and file progressive Democrat voter type would rather be fair to people. Imagine that. And then, but the leadership of the Democratic Party and political necessity says that the candidates must never go along with that or they're done. Because it's not, at the end of the day, I guess not always in every circumstance, and there is a balance, and it could go the other way someday if the priorities were set straight. But usually the dollars win out over the votes, because, you know, how many Austinites, for example, progressive Democrat voters, are one-issue Palestine people who are willing to withhold a vote from a Zionist liberal Democrat candidate like Beto? Probably very few. Right. What's his cost for taking this position, other than this very negative interview about him, is not very much, you know?
True. Yeah. And then he goes on. There's one more paragraph. He says he supported the Taylor Force Act, which prohibits certain foreign aid from being made available for the West Bank and Gaza unless the State Department certifies that the Palestinian Authority is taking steps to end acts of violence. So he wants.
Yeah, what's he even talking about? Is there an intifada going on the West Bank right now? Or he just doesn't even have to make sense at all. Well, remember that one time when Arafat did something?
Yeah, I mean, anytime they don't toe the line, it's trouble. But look here, I mean, it's ironic that Israel, the aid given to Israel is in violation of U.S. laws, of the Arms Export Control Act. And there is no problem with that, apparently.
But is that the same thing as the Leahy Law, or that too?
Yeah, I think that's the same one, of 1976.
Right, that says that the American government is banned from providing aid to countries that are committing human rights abuses.
Yeah, and that they are restricted to using the weapons for legitimate self-defense. Mm. So Israel, they're okay, you know, as all of U.S. government does. They turn a blind eye to Israel violating this, but they want to monitor, they want to make sure that the PA is doing its job, which is to disarm and end Palestinian resistance. Basically, it's a demand to surrender. And then he ends that paragraph with his commitment to oppose efforts economically and diplomatically to boycott or delegitimize Israel. So he's making a stand against our right to boycott.
Mm-hmm. Well, a couple of things there. I mean, first of all, whatever arms the PA have were given to them by the American U.S. Army who trained their internal security forces there. General Dayton is the one who put them in charge, and that was all a joint agreement between America, Israel, and the PA. Now he's trying to pretend like, oh, they have this army. I demand they disarm. What does he mean disarm? They were conquered 50 years ago.
Yep, exactly.
It's the whole thing is just, and see, this is the problem, man, is whatever people and... You know, I like how when you say he's a progressive, what you cite are things where he wants to stop doing bad stuff to people, maybe like on pot or something like that. God knows what all he's for doing to people. But this kind of thing smacks of the most rank dishonesty. You know, you can make some kind of argument for Israel, for politics. I wouldn't even look the other way. I'd still resent it. But I hate being lied to like this, where he wants to pretend, what, that the West Bank is in the middle of a massive insurrection? That the PA is leading it? That they have some guerrilla army that's fighting Israel right now? Is that what he's pretending to me in this, to you in this letter?
I guess.
For Christ's sake, man.
Yeah. It's like he's reading a script from the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs, basically.
Yeah, well, and of course, right, if he started editing their letter, he might get in trouble with them, and he's a lot more worried about that, apparently. Yeah.
Exactly. And so another thing that's dishonest is, although his campaign claims not to take PAC money, they did take money from J Street, not directly from J Street, but money that J Street collected from donors. So I guess that gives the same leverage as PAC money, because he is going with what they demand in order to endorse a candidate. They demand that the candidate opposes the boycott. And here he is already making a public statement of opposing the boycott in line with their request.
Yeah. Well, so no wonder he's running against Ted Cruz, since he agrees with Ted Cruz more than Ted Cruz agrees with himself. And he's going to out Ted Cruz on Palestine. What a hero.
Yeah. Well,
I wonder, has he given a speech at John Hagee's Cornerstone Church down in San Antonio yet? To promise to bring Jesus back sooner for these kooks?
Yeah, no, that wouldn't be surprising.
That's still on his calendar. He hasn't gotten that one. I guess his staff is probably working on that right now, since he's going to go ahead and be Ted Cruz anyway. Why not show up at John Hagee's church and go along with the worst of this? All right, so now you wrote a letter, and so I guess, first of all, sorry for all my editorializing. I just hate politicians so much. But anyway, I go off on these tangents sometimes. Forgiveness all around for me, please, guys. You wrote this substantive and important open letter in response to him. So tell us about that, and then also, please, about the response that you got.
Okay, sure. So I went through his letter point by point. I started with, you know, a proud advocate of Israel, and pointed out that Israel is a state that was built by ethnic cleansing. It's a colonialist settler state based on racial supremacy, and it's nothing to be proud of being an advocate of such a state that is violating international law and committing war crimes. So I started with that, and then I went line by line with what he said. I mean, why is Israel critically important to the U.S.? How does that serve the people of the U.S.? I mean, Israel has dragged the U.S. into the Iraq War, and it's, you know, it. I think the alliance with Israel is causing the U.S. more harm than good. And then I went on to his point that, you know, he calls it the home of the Jewish people, so right there, he is dismissing the indigenous people's rights, the Palestinian rights to the land or to being there. Then his next point was, you know, that it's a exemplary democracy that shares our values. Well, you know, it's really not a democracy, and it's proved that it's not a democracy by passing the nation state law recently that actually enables makes discrimination legal. I mean, it is now legal to discriminate against non-Jews in Israel. So how is that an exemplary democracy? And next, you know, I just went point by point about the $38 billion, what they could have been doing here in the U.S.
Oh, no, don't skip number 5. I like it.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, he talks about our national security objectives, and that's basically having access to oil. And why do they need Israel to have access to oil? I mean, all of the Arab governments, oil-producing governments, especially Saudi Arabia, are U.S. allies. So just didn't make sense to me that why they need Israel too. Yeah, and then after that...
I mean, hey, that's really important because it's one of those things that just goes without saying, almost on the level of fighting for our freedom or whatever, is that, yeah, well, Israel is our unsinkable aircraft carrier over there, adding to our strategic this or that, no matter the circumstance. But, boy, that's really not true. A lot of times their interests are entirely different than ours. For example, their occupation of Palestine, of the West Bank and Gaza, and their persecution of the Palestinians helps provoke terrorist attacks against the United States, for one thing. And for another, for example, America, along with Israel, prioritizes Iranian influence in the region and fighting that over fighting al-Qaeda. And in fact, we'll even back al-Qaeda fighters along with Israel against factions that are friendly with Iran, when it's al-Qaeda that attacked America, not Iran. And but they get Israel's priorities in place of America's. And just like Walt Mearsheimer showed in the Israel lobby, I mean, we would have never had, George Bush would have never been able to push through Iraq War II if it hadn't have been for the neoconservatives and their Israel first, Ariel Sharon's Likud party first policy.
Exactly. Plus, it doesn't enhance U.S. credibility. In the eyes of most of the world, what's going on in Palestine is a huge injustice, and the U.S. and Israel are just being bullies. I mean, it's not really good for the U.S. image in most of the world also.
Right. And you know what? I mean, for that matter, not like we need this, but it's notable that General Petraeus and General Mattis both have said the exact same thing. And they're looking at it from a purely sort of just the facts, ma'am, Joe Friday kind of thing, that from a strategic point of view, we have to take into account in our PowerPoint presentation that one of the things that we have to deal with is the problems created for us by our alliance with Israel. It's never all the list of great benefits we get. It's always how, you know, they cause problems. You know, Ray McGovern, sorry, I'm editorializing more. Ray McGovern always cites how the assassination of Sheikh Yassin in the spring of 2004 led to the riot that led to the lynching of the Blackwater guards in Fallujah and hanging their burned corpses from the bridge, which led to Mattis's first and second attacks on Fallujah in 2004 in the spring and then in the fall, and the first battle against Sadr's forces in Najaf at the same time that spring. And all of this. And these were direct consequences from Israeli foreign policy blowing back into the not that everything would have been fine in Iraq, but that caused a real problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
Happens all the time. But no, we're supposed to just think, yeah, thank God they're out there without ever questioning that. As though it's just, it must be that there's a strategic benefit from having this supposed alliance, it's not on paper, alliance with Israel. That, in fact, I don't know anybody. I'm trying to remember. Somebody made one credible point about something they do for us, but I can't imagine what, other than recycling, American welfare into American arms industrial firms. But I'm not for that either. So,
but you know what they do for the U.S. I think is also push the envelope of what you can get away with. Like, you know, when they exert enormous violence, then you know, the what's tolerable or what's possible gets pushed along, so the U.S. is able to do more also. Like let me give you an example. For example, when I was at Standing Rock, I saw tactics being used against Americans here at home that are very similar to what Israel, the way Israel confronted protesters in cities like Belain in Palestine.
And they probably were trained over there. I mean, that's been an epidemic of the training of American cops. And then they come home and now we're all a bunch of Palestinians to them.
Yeah. And the entire militarization of the police force is all modeled on that, too, on how Israel does it.
Yeah. Well, the Scott Horton Show is brought to you by books, particularly Kesslyn Runs, a new dystopian novel about the very near future by the great Charles Featherstone. Kesslyn Runs. Also, No Dev, No Ops, No IT by Hussein Bodakchani and the War State by Mike Swanson about the rise of the military-industrial complex in America after World War II. He also gives great investment advice at WallStreetWindow.com. And when you follow his advice, you'll want to get some precious metals, gold and silver and et cetera, from Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. That's at rrbi.co. rrbi.co. Also, check out Zencash at zencash.com or zensystem.io. It's a great digital currency, but it's also a messaging app and a document transfer app and all kinds of great stuff, too. Learn all about it at zencash.com. And then there's Tom Wood's Liberty Classroom. If you sign up from the link on my page at scotthorton.org, I'll get a little bit of a kickback there. And check this out. Speaking of scotthorton.org, if you'd like expanddesigns.com to build you a new 2018 model website, go to expanddesigns.com/Scott and you'll save $500. Also, don't forget the bumpersticker.com. Stickers for your band or your business at very reasonable prices. High quality stuff there. It used to be my company back when. Thebumpersticker.com. There's something that the Jewish Institute for National Security Affairs, or I know they changed their name a little bit. They just changed the A stands for something else, associations or something. But this is something that they should take into account, is that if they turn us all, you know, with their, they're the one, the brainchild group behind this thing where the Israelis train American cops, that if they turn us all into a bunch of Palestinians, that terminology might get around and people might start catching on. To what's going on over there, you know? Bad public relations, JINSA.
True. Yeah, right?
Yeah. The men from JINSA. Hey, there's an important article by Jason Vest and Robert Dreyfus. The men from JINSA, about the guys who pushed us into Iraq War II. Same guys. So
back to the letter. Yeah. I'm going to go to number 10 because he ended it. We talked about most of those points already. But in number 10, he ends it with, so long as he is an elected official, Beto vows to stand as an advocate of security and peace in Israel. So again, you know, he's just mentioning he's only concerned about Israel, even though the question wasn't about Israel. It was about Palestine, Israel. He just showed, you know, concern and a commitment for the security of Israel. So it just shows that, you know, his position is totally, totally biased and in contradiction with the values that he tries to portray.
Mm-hmm. All right. So what kind of reaction did you get from this besides Mondo Weiss?
No answer from his campaign.
Well, what about Texas Democrat bloggers and Facebookers and things? Do they care?
Well, yeah, there's been a lot of his supporters have been annoyed by this because they're like, you know, he's still way better than Cruz and we need to get Cruz out of office. And he's, you know, no matter, still the lesser of two evils. And, you know, people want Cruz out. So that's a big fear and that's a big driver in getting support for Beto, no matter what he does or says, pretty much.
Yeah. I can certainly see the benefits of the destruction of Ted Cruz here, but doesn't seem like we'll see much benefit in his replacement if this guy does win, which to me also is highly suspect. I mean, I guess, I don't know, we're supposed to believe that the Democrats have the Me Too movement mobilized enough that they're going to elect all these Democrats, but Texas is a pretty red state. We used to call them Democrats. Now they're Republicans, but they're conservatives. They're the right. And it's basically a one-party state from here to there, except the very Gulf Coast where there's some union voters and whatever. But it's not like the Hispanic vote uniformly is Democrat, I don't believe. So he stands about a snowball's chance in hell of winning this election either way, right?
Well, no, actually, the polls are showing him to be just a few points away, so he does have a chance. He does have a chance.
Ted Cruz has got—he's like the Hillary Clinton of the Republican Party. He's got some huge charisma issues that just can't be avoided. You see the pictures during the presidential campaign where he tried to give his daughter a nice little peck on the cheek, and she's like, "Ooh, gross!" Like she reacts against him so horrible, like she's just absolutely disgusted and horrified that he would touch her in any way, you know. He's a very creepy dude, so I can see how pretty much anybody ought to be able to beat him. But anyway, I don't know.
A lot of the reactions. No, yeah, but a lot of the reactions are, you know, he's still better on Palestine. He's still better than Cruz, and you know, I don't know if I don't feel those progressive politicians on the left of the Democratic Party are going far enough in being balanced. I think they're still intimidated and pressured by the Israel lobby. And they're taking the Palestinian voters for granted, or the Palestinian American voters, I mean, and our supporters. They're just taking us for granted. And I felt, you know, they need to hear that, no, this will not do. And we expect better from you.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the thing is too, is there's a real kind of perverse opposite effect going on here too, where people, you know, attitude follows behavior. So if they're willing to overlook this, then that proves that they're willing to overlook this. And in fact, now they have experience in overlooking this. And now actually, you know, supporting their partisan choice is more important than Palestinians. And that is officially their position and how they behave. And it's a great predictor of how they're going to behave in the future. That, you know what, a lot of things are important, but that one's just not as important to me, as proven by the fact that I voted for this Beto guy anyway, even though that, you would think that the complete deprivation of the human rights of these people, as you point out, with American dollars and American support in every way, would matter enough to them to mean something. But I guess it's the age old trick, right? Well, he's up against Ted Cruz. You prefer that. So there you go. And whatever your concern is, has to go. The right wingers all say the same thing. Ted Cruz has a lot of problems, but you want this progressive, you know, liberal kook who believes in X, Y, and Z. And we got to vote for our guy because he's the best guy we got, et cetera. That's why we live here. That's how things are the way they are now.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, man. Well, so I'm happy to meet you, and I'm glad to know that you're a fellow Austinite with me here, and that you know, you're doing this pro-Palestinian activism, because I think, you know what, I might really be wrong about this, Haitham, but my opinion is that if the American people, by and large, right and left and whoever, whichever factions, if they really understood about how the Palestinians had lost the 22% of what was left of Palestine completely to defeat and occupation and colonization back 50 years ago, and that all they want is to declare independence, not conquer part of Israel, but to take the little bit of what's left. That if the American people, you know, to have it for themselves and to have independence, if the American people understood the reality of that, I think that they would choose the Palestinians. And there are a lot of countervailing forces on that. But it seems to me like bottom line is, well, maybe I kind of have to believe this, that the truth, you know, would set people free, and that if they really understood that they would do the right thing, and so much, I mean, otherwise, why do they lie with this ridiculous Hasbara all day long about poor little Israel under siege from their Palestinian terrorist enemies and all of this stuff? They have to frame it that way because it's not true, and they need that as cover. You know?
Exactly. I mean, this you basically hit the nail on the head. This misinformation, this propaganda, is what makes it possible for Israel to keep doing that. And, you know, yeah, a lot of the American public relying on mainstream media is very misinformed, and they tend to see Israel as the victim who's defending themselves. And, you know, when it's totally, I mean, it's a clear issue of colonialism and ethnic cleansing. And by the way, I just want to clarify something, that Palestinians now aren't looking anymore to negotiate a two-state solution on part of the 22%. I mean, those negotiations were a sham, and the whole two-state concept is a sham because it enables Israel to remain the dominant superior power, and the state that would be offered to Palestinians wouldn't even be fully sovereign. So what we are looking for now and demanding is equal rights, which I think should sound reasonable to every American. Equal rights for all. One man, one vote, you know.
Well, how settled is that debate inside the different pro-Palestinian activist movements?
I think
certainly not Mahmoud Abbas's point of view, right?
No, yeah, of course, because Mahmoud Abbas is in a separate, he's a beneficiary of the status quo, and he's paid by the U.S., basically. So he doesn't benefit from that. The PA doesn't benefit from that. But most of the people are realizing that, you know, the two-state solution is a sham, and we want our rights to return to our lands on all of Palestine, all of historic Palestine, and to live as equals with Israeli Jews. I mean, this is right now Israel. It is in effect already a one state because Israel controls it all. So it's just an apartheid state, and we're demanding to get rid of the apartheid and treat all humans as equals with equal rights and dignity.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I can't help but agree with you. Not that it's my call, but it sure does seem like if there was a time for the two-state solution, which would have been better for the Israelis from their own point of view about keeping their super-duper majority Jewish state there, exactly. that ship sailed a long time ago.
It sure did. Yeah.
But, sure remains to be seen how a one-state solution can come about in the current circumstances. With the Americans and the UN and everybody else saying otherwise forever, but I guess we'll see. Yeah. I mean, well, it'll go ahead.
It'll take a lot of grassroots effort because, the U.S. government doesn't support that, and so we have formidable forces and the European Union, it'll take a lot of organizing on the streets, basically.
And you know what? I want to back up what you say a little bit here with, you know, I read this extremely important book. I hope you've read it, or I hope you will read it. Obstacle to Peace by Jeremy Hammond, where he goes through in maybe overly meticulous detail about American obstruction of the international law rulings about Israel having to give up the West Bank and let the Palestinians have independence there. And, you know, he really goes to show, regardless of motive, all motive aside, not that he puts it completely aside necessarily, but I'm just saying he certainly shows how America has certainly in practice made the two-state solution, as you said, nothing really but a sham as cover for Israel to continue to devour and colonize the West Bank and make it their own, all while pretending that someday will come when someday will never come. And there's never been a commitment to see this through. And how, as he points out, you can tell in their language all the time when they say a two-state solution, they mean we're always at a point of not yet starting from scratch defining what that's supposed to mean. When everybody already knows what the two-state solution is, the green line, right? But maybe some swaps here or there to some limited extent. But Instead, it's the Americans really are simply running, you know, really dishonestly as Israel's lawyer this whole time, running interference for them as they get away with this. So it certainly is a crisis. It's certainly brought to a head. And, you know, I don't know, though. One thing I've never heard, and I interview Ramzi Baroud all the time. He's a great one state guy, Palestinian refugee himself. But one thing I've never heard is something that I can, you know, a description of anything I can picture about the Israelis finally giving up and saying, okay, all right, you can all just be citizens of Israel and we'll just be friends and protect each other's property rights and stuff. You know, I don't know.
No, they will never do that willingly. So, you know, for that to happen, U.S. aid has to stop, basically.
Yeah, the U.S. Supreme Court would have to rule and Ike would have to send in the troops. And so, and that isn't going to happen, so... Well, it's a hell of a thing. Now, is there a group that you're a part of here or anything here in Austin that you're doing?
Yes, there's the Interfaith Community for Palestinian Rights, basically works to raise awareness about the situation. We do events. Actually, we have an event coming up on Sunday, which if you'd let, if I can announce here.
Sure.
It's going on Sunday at noon at St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church in North Austin on Wells Branch. And the event is called In Solidarity with the Children of Palestine.
I know the church. Yeah, I've seen their signs out front. I'm sorry, Pastor, go ahead.
That's Pastor Jim Rigby's church. So we're inviting Kali Rubai from Friends of Sabil North America to give a presentation about that and draw similarities between how children are being separated from their parents here at the border and caged and abused and what is done to children in Palestine. So this event is free, open to the public, and we'll also have Middle Eastern food and an exhibit about the whole history of Palestine. So yeah, we would love to have you and your listeners there.
And that starts at what time now?
The event starts at 12:30, but the reception is at 12.
Okay, great. You know what? I'm going to really try to go to that. I have it here in my notes, and as long as people are being invited to things, I'm giving a talk on Thursday at this place, Monkey something or other. It's a wine bar on South Congress, on Pickle and South Congress, just north of Highway 71 down there, just north of Ben White. I could send you a link to it if you're interested. Angela Keaton from antiwar.com and I are giving a little talk there, so if you want to come up to that. But yeah. But yeah, that sounds great, the Palestinian thing. I don't do too much activism and event attendance and stuff like that, but I'll see what I could do. And one way or the other, I'm certainly glad that you're doing this kind of work. It's great.
Thank you. Thanks, Scott. And thank you for what you're doing. I mean, your alternative media is really an important source of getting better information than all the misinformation on mainstream media. So I really appreciate what you do.
Yeah, sure thing. Happy to have you here. All right. Thank you again, Haytham.
Okay, Scott. Take care.
All right, you guys. That's Haytham El-Zabri. And you can find him on Facebook at facebook.com/El-Zabri, E-L-Z-A-B-R-I. And read about him also at MondoWeiss.net. Beto O'Rourke is anti-Trump and pro-Israel. All right, y'all. Thanks. Find me at libertarianinstitute.org. At ScottHorton.org, antiwar.com, and reddit.com/ScottHortonShow. Oh yeah, and read my book, Fool's Errand, Timed and the War in Afghanistan at foolserrand.us.